everybody. Vegas Dave Consolazio here alongside Kevin KT Taylor for week 11 of NFL Beyond the Numbers. Not a good week for me on my picks, KT, and not a good week for quarterbacks last week either.
No, we had a bunch of them go down, almost all of them with concussions, which was kind of interesting.
Almost all of them. It did feel that way. If you watched ESPN, it felt like the entire league had fallen.
But the one actually that wasn't a concussion looks like it might be the biggest one, which is Big Ben Roethlisberger, who is one of the toughest quarterbacks that we've ever seen play the game. It seems like you pretty much have to cut this guy's leg off to not make him play. And now he has a separated shoulder, a dislocated rib, and I think he's questionable on Sunday.
Right, exactly. The thing, hearing him talk about it when he was saying, yeah, the shoulder sucks, but the dislocated rib that almost killed me. That is basically one bad hit away from puncturing my aorta. That's definitely a reason to stay out of the game for what appears to be an extended stay. And so, you know, with the concussions around the league, you had Cutler, Smith, and Vic all leave their games with concussions. Those are always tough to gauge injuries because even when somebody looks good, you don't know that one more hit isn't going to jar them again. It might be a more extended stay.
Yeah, and I mean, Alex Smith, you know, again, we're talking about it before, he's might return on Monday, and they're talking about Vic with his concussion might be out the rest of the season, so it's always tough to tell what the extent of the injury is.
Exactly, and Cutler, we still haven't really heard much of anything, so it's all kind of up in the air. We'll just touch on Vic really quickly, because it would appear that Philadelphia's season was already done anyway. Mm-hmm. Is this the final nail in the coffin, or was there already the nail in the coffin?
Yeah, you know, I think this is. I think the main thing is that, not necessarily Andy Reid, but I think the Eagles were looking for an excuse to get Nick Foles on the field, because he is seemingly their future, despite all of the money that they're putting into Michael Vick. So I think that was going to happen eventually, and so it's just a matter of it happening now is not a really big deal for the Eagles. Nick Foles, I suppose, is the future here. At 3-6, their season is done. Basically, whoever lost that Cowboys-Eagles game was going to be out of the playoff contention, and the winner was going to still have an outside shot at it. I think that looking at this season, it looks like probably another 8-8 at best for Philadelphia, and it has to be the last season for Andy Reid if that's the case. And I think maybe next year, now even with this injury amplifying it, we mentioned it last week how it might be the time this offseason to get rid of Andy Reid, go on from Michael Vick and go with Nick Foles. That might even be more the case now.
Yeah, I'm not sure if the plan long term is to get rid of Vick or not, but this is a great chance for Nick Foles to make that decision easier for Philadelphia. If he goes out there and looks great.
And he made some good throws on Sunday.
He
looked terrible.
And he looked great during the preseason. Yeah. If he can continue that, you know, the schedule is somewhat soft. I mean, there are definitely games. At Dallas is going to be tricky. At Tampa Bay now is looking tougher. But as far as defenses go, Washington, Carolina's okay. But Cincinnati, Washington, Tampa Bay, there are some spots for Foles to have big games here. And if he does, we might see a complete blow up in Philadelphia, because obviously this dream team that they put together last year did not work, and they're going to have to make a lot of changes. They're going to have to cut payroll in a big way, and it might be Foles leading them, or if it's a complete disaster over the next six to seven weeks, it might buy Vic another season or two to get his game back on track. But looking at Roethlisberger and Cutler, assuming both of these guys are out a little while, and Roethlisberger, it certainly appears, is going to be out at least. The problem with both of these injuries, looking at the shoulder and a rib injury, they're the type of injuries that, if you come back early, they can absolutely get re-injured. Mm-hmm. So they're not going to want to risk that. But for a rib to heal up and a shoulder to heal up, we're talking about 6 weeks. And even for an Iron Man like him, 4 weeks. Mm. And in those 4 weeks, you've got Baltimore twice.
Yeah.
So does this essentially wrap up the division for the Ravens?
I'm not going to go so far as to say that, but it's not looking good for Pittsburgh, because what's interesting about Roethlisberger is that his whole season, his whole career, he's never put up the MVP numbers that Tom Brady or Drew Brees or somebody like that is going to put up. But as far as a player who's so valuable to his team, as far as the way that he runs the offense, the way that this offense goes is that they Big Ben improvises plays, he gets out of the pocket, he keeps the play going, and that's how he gets his receivers open. That's how their whole offense works. So if you want to talk about a quarterback who's so valuable to his team, Roethlisberger has to be up there in the top five, definitely top 10 for me. So the fact that you're losing him, and then you're going to play Baltimore twice in 3 weeks, the injury could not have come at a worse time. And Byron Leftwich is a fine guy to go for 8 years ago. I don't know what he's going to do for you now. I mean, you looked at him on Sunday. Did you see the windup that he had on Sunday where he was like, it was like Tim Tebow, but even worse. It was like, I don't even know how to describe
Tebow,
it.
Tebow says, man, what's with that guy?
Yeah.
I mean, the thing, it's tricky for me with both of these situations because I look at this, the drop-off from Roethlisberger to Leftwich, I think, is considerably more than the drop-off from Cutler to Campbell.
Absolutely.
And but when I look at Pittsburgh's schedule, at Cleveland, I still think is a win with Leftwich.
Mm-hmm.
Home against San Diego, I think, is a win with Leftwich. It's a bit tougher now, but yeah. Pittsburgh doesn't lose at home very often.
It's true.
At Dallas, that's one of those ones that, you know, you definitely like to have Roethlisberger back by then. Home against Cincinnati, home against Cleveland, I think those are both wins with a backup quarterback, especially if they get Mendenhall back, which mm-hmm. looks like they're going to. So these Baltimore games are really the ones that I'm concerned with if I'm Pittsburgh, and obviously they feel that way. So I'm just wondering if the defense and the running game can steal one of them. If they can split, they can keep this division race alive down the stretch. And I just don't know that they can. I don't
think they can either because of what you said with this running game. All of these guys are beat up. So a backup running back would want to rely on a Rashard Mendenhall, a Jonathan Dwyer. They don't know week in, week out, it's going to be. It looks like Mendenhall might finally be back. So if you want to have some good news for Pittsburgh, that's probably it. But I remember, I think it was a couple years ago, and I believe it was a Sunday night game, and I'm not sure if it was in Baltimore or in Pittsburgh. Maybe you remember. But Dennis Dixon came in.
Mm-hmm.
One night game for Pittsburgh. Ben was out for a week. I forget what the injury was, but he couldn't play. I think it might be a thumb issue or something. Dennis Dixon came in. Pittsburgh did not win the game, but Dixon kept them in the entire game. It was the fourth quarter, I think, finally. I think it might have even gone to overtime, and Dixon might have thrown an interception, if I'm not mistaken. So that might have been the issue. So they have experience with playing Baltimore without Ben Roethlisberger, so they can go back to that. I just don't know. If they're going to do it, it would be this week, because they're at home this week.
Right.
So that's going to be a big indication.
I mean, the thing, you know, and they've had success with Charlie Batch stepping in at different points, too. The problem is, this isn't the Baltimore Ravens of the last decade. Yeah. With Flacco's arm and this wide receiving corps and Ray Rice, this team isn't just settle for field goal 9-6 Baltimore anymore. And you could also say that their defense isn't as strong as it was, but you look at the last three games that Baltimore has played against Pittsburgh. They swept the series last year, which propelled them to the AFC North title. The last three games they've played against Pittsburgh, they've scored at least 24 points. And so,
and there's going to be no Troy Polamalu.
And there's no Troy Polamalu. I don't think that 24 points changes on Baltimore's side. Without Roethlisberger, I don't know that Pittsburgh gets 20. To 27 on Baltimore. And so the defense is going to have to step up with a hell of a game here at home, come up with some turnovers, which we haven't seen Pittsburgh do this year. It's a shame because the Steelers were on a roll, and I actually thought for a minute there they were going to take the division from Baltimore in these few weeks, but now these games have lost their luster a bit. But it would be interesting to see Pittsburgh pull off what would now definitely be an upset this week, and then, you know, really create an interesting race down the stretch. But when you look at Cutler to Campbell, I honestly feel like most of the games left on Chicago's schedule, they can win with either of these guys. Because not that it's a good thing that Cutler's injured. It's not. And we saw that in the second half. Clearly, this offense did not look good. But that was against one of the best defenses in the league. And honestly, Chicago's offense hasn't been that great. It's been masked by the fact that the defense has been outstanding. And it's had a couple of timely scores. But there have been a lot of close games. And this might end up getting the running game going, because Forte hasn't been utilized nearly enough in this offense, I don't think. They have Michael Bush they signed over the offseason. Maybe getting Campbell in there, maybe they start establishing a running game again. It might actually do them some good long term.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because obviously on Monday the Bears play the 49ers, and we haven't even talked about Alex Smith and his concussion yet. So there's the potential that this game that was going to be so great and still would be with those two backups of Cutler and if Cutler and Smith, you know, on Monday Night Football, that would have been huge. But now it looks like it's going to be Kaepernick versus Campbell. And Kaepernick is an interesting one because he's kind of come out of nowhere so far this year and really had his breakout game when they played the Jets. And Jim Harbaugh said that he was going to out Tebow and put Kaepernick in, who had a fantastic game. Kaepernick came in and was, you know, fine against St. Louis, but that game still ended in a tie for them, which was a disappointment at home. So is Kaepernick going to be a guy who can get you a couple wins without Alex Smith, especially going up against the Chicago defense? I'm not so sure. I think that all of a sudden this game on Monday has turned even to more of a defensive shootout. We already thought it would probably be along the lines of a 17-14, 20-17 game. Now it might even be a 13-10 kind of game we saw on Monday with Pittsburgh and Kansas City.
Yes, some reports I've read have said that Smith is looking like he's actually going to be able to play Monday, that he's passed some of his tests, and then other ones are saying it's still too early to call. If there's any kind of setback, I actually think San Francisco has more to lose than Chicago and Pittsburgh. Kaepernick, love him, great athlete, not a quarterback yet. And when you look at San Francisco's schedule, I talked about Pittsburgh and how I feel like they'd win a lot of their games with or without Roethlisberger just because of their defense in the running game. Cutler to Campbell, home against Minnesota, after this week against San Francisco, home against Minnesota, home against Seattle, at Minnesota, should be able to win those with Campbell. Home against Green Bay, you probably lose with either of them. At Arizona, you win with either of them. It's kind of like I'm fine either way. With San Francisco, Chicago, at New Orleans, at St. Louis, Miami, at New England, at Seattle. That's just a really tough stretch to try and send a backup quarterback out there that's not really a true quarterback yet. So San Francisco definitely needs Smith to be healthy, or they might be in trouble not to lose their playoff spot, but to potentially lose the division if Seattle comes on strong at the end here.
Let me ask you this question, because, of course, we have the 49ers defense and the Bears defense. We both know how physically imposing they are, how hard-hitting they are. If either Cutler or Smith are cleared to play on Monday, do you consider not playing them, putting your backup in, not necessarily mailing the game, if you will, but just protecting your quarterbacks, because a concussion is an injury that's very easy to re-aggravate. Against opposing defenses like this, do you put your backup quarterback in there for a game, not only to get him some experience, but just to rest your guys against a very tough, hard-hitting defense?
If he's cleared to play medically, and he's cleared, as in not at the bare minimum, but he's physically ready to go, you got to send him out there, because what difference does it make? You can send him out there next week, and you're right. Now, these are particularly physical defenses, but you know, it can always, bad things can always happen. You can't think in those terms. But having said that, I understand where you're coming from, in that if he was cleared to play by the minimum standards that the NFL will allow you to play, I might not accept those. I might say, how good are you feeling? I need you to be 100% honest with me, because this game isn't going to decide our season. You going down for the rest of the year is. And that's kind of the feeling I got from Lovie Smith, that he doesn't seem urgent at all to get Cutler back. He was just saying, this guy's not going to hit the practice field until he's feeling 100%. And that's, it's the right mentality to take, and it makes perfect sense, especially in a game like this. But makes the decision a little easier if the other team isn't playing their starter. Yeah. Because then at least you're both at an equal disadvantage, and mm-hmm. you can just kind of go out there and see what happens. But strange development that what was looking like a potential NFC championship preview is now
up in the air. We don't
Jason
know.
Campbell, who's now has his seventh offensive coordinator in 8 years, going up against a kid, Colin Kaepernick, potentially. It could be pretty wild.
Yeah, the last thing that I'll say is that I think that overall that Cutler is a better quarterback than Alex Smith is, but I actually think just because of the backups that they have, I think Alex Smith is a little more important to the 49ers. He's more of the game manager. Kaepernick is, if they have to go with him for the long haul, I think he's going to be very predictable, and I think that offense is really going to struggle, especially if they're going to key in on Frank Gore, who is the key to that offense. If Kaepernick isn't a huge threat to throw the ball down the field, they can pack it in and really beat up Frank Gore, and that could be an issue for them.
You know, I before we move on to our picks, I agree that Cutler is the better quarterback if we're just looking at, just arm strength and tangibles and things like that, but these guys are fit for their offenses. I don't think either would fit well if you traded. Cutler takes way too many chances and makes way too many stupid decisions to run a hardball offense, and Smith doesn't have the raw talent to be able to throw the ball down the field like Cutler can and spread the field. So I think these guys fit in their offenses, and that's why these are two of the elite teams in the NFC. And but we both agree that the backup advantage goes to Chicago based on Campbell's experience, no question. So let's go ahead and get into your picks.
So let's go to the picks. I am 16-12-2 after last week. You, sir, are 13-17.
That's correct. You swept last week.
I did. I had a good week, which means I'll probably go 1-3 this week based on how the whole season has gone for me. I either destroy 1 week or I get destroyed. It's one or the other.
Yes, indeedy.
I'm going to start off with my favorite pick of the board. It's Green Bay. They're -3.5 at Detroit. And all season long, I've been picking bye teams coming off their bye week. And I'm not making any exceptions this week. I'm going with two of them. Green Bay is the main one. I think that right now, it literally changes every single week who I think the best team in the AFC is, the best team in the NFC. Despite their record, and I know some teams are better than them, I think right now Green Bay might be the best team. Because they are getting towards being healthy. Jordy Nelson's going to come back at 100%. They still need to get Greg Jennings back from his groin injury. It's going to be a couple more weeks, but Randall Cobb had an absolute monster of a game 2 weeks ago. This offense is finally clicking on all cylinders. Detroit had a really big game last week against Minnesota to get themselves to 5-4, have a shot at maybe getting back into the playoff race, and they lost 34-24. Even though this game is in Detroit, I love Green Bay. And what's interesting about Green Bay is that this division has been so tough all season. Green Bay has only played one division game, and that was against Chicago in week 2. Now they're going to play 5 division games in the next 7 weeks. It's going to obviously determine the factor of who wins the division, but I love Green Bay in this division over any of those teams, so I think that Green Bay might close the season out winning 6 of 7 games.
Yeah, they were already looking pretty good just going into this week with 4 straight wins. And it looked like they might already take the division. If Cutler's out for any extended period of time, that would only enhance the likelihood of that happening. I actually love all 3 of your picks this week, but I'm going to... it doesn't happen ever. But I'm going to try and argue against them because it wouldn't be much of a show if I said, oh, gee, I agree 100%, let's go on.
Yeah.
This one's the toughest one to make an argument for because not only has Green Bay had a chance to prepare, and not only are they hot, but if you look at the last 5 or 6 years, they've dominated Detroit. This rivalry has been completely one-sided. If I have to make a case for Detroit, I'm saying I'm getting 3.5 points at home. This is a division rivalry game. It absolutely could be a close game. I have a great pass rushing team, and if Green Bay has one weakness, it's if you can get to Rodgers.
Yeah.
That's the only chance you have to beat him. Detroit has the capability, or I should say they have the personnel to get to him. And lastly, last week, Detroit was one of my favorite picks on the board. I thought they were going to go in and stomp Minnesota. And one of the reasons they lost that game, I would imagine, is because they were looking ahead to this week, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were looking ahead to this week, I hope you have some prep for it then, because if you throw that game away against a Minnesota team that was reeling, mm-hmm. and then you come home now and blow this game,
yeah,
that's curtains on the season. So the season's on the line for Detroit here, but Green Bay's got plenty of motivation too,
sure.
So that's the best I can do.
Second pick that I like is Cleveland. They're +8 at Dallas, and another situation of Cleveland is coming off the bye week, so I love that, especially for this team with Trent Richardson, who has had a rib injury that's been bothering him for a while now, and he has the week off. And I remember, I don't know if he tweeted or if he just said in an interview that once his rib is back, it's going to be a completely different Trent Richardson. He's going to be ready to go and maybe put up some of the early numbers he did earlier in the season, especially against this Dallas defense, which every time I mention them, I always talk about their corners, and they're built to stop the pass. They're not necessarily built to stop the run. Cleveland is built to run the ball and not necessarily pass the ball. Because of those reasons, I think Cleveland, even on the road, can cover this +8-point spread, and I think they actually even have a shot at pulling off this upset. Because Dallas is coming off, of course, the emotional division win last week against Philadelphia. As we mentioned earlier, I think that that was a make-or-break game for whoever won that game. Whoever lost, I think, was going to be out of the playoffs. Whoever won still has a shot at it. This is a game that Dallas should win and needs to win if they want to make the playoffs, but I think that Cleveland's going to keep it close. Cleveland has kept a lot of games close this year. Their record does not indicate how well they've been playing. I think they're going to keep it within a touchdown, and as I said, even on the road, I actually think they have a decent shot pulling off the upset.
Yeah, I think 8 points is way too many for a team that plays games this closely, but when you talk about that, how well Dallas defends against the pass and how poorly Cleveland's passing game is, how poor their passing game is, that would indicate to me that Dallas could load up the box pretty comfortably and focus almost entirely on stopping Trent Richardson and feel pretty comfortable leaving their very talented corner duo mm-hmm. on islands. So they might have a game plan here. This spread feels a little trappy because I don't think a lot of people are lining up to lay 8 sure. points to play Dallas right now. I mean, even against Cleveland and even coming off of that win against Philadelphia, I mean, Dallas just, we've talked about it, they always find ways to lose. Mm-hmm. They just got out loss. They found a team that loves to lose more than they do.
Yeah.
With the two straight, the pick six and the, I mean, it was just a disaster.
Unreal.
Philadelphia gave that game away.
Yeah.
And so, little trappy, they could have an answer for Richardson, but also, if you look at Dallas, when it's all said and done, yeah, I've got my problems with Dallas, and I talk a lot of crap about them, but if you look at their five losses, Seattle, that was in Seattle,
mm-hmm.
Which at Seattle is as good as any team in the league. Chicago, Baltimore, New York Giants, Atlanta.
Not bad.
That's just
not bad.
Elite teams. Now, if you're going to be a playoff team, you eventually have to beat a win a game like that. But Dallas, when they lose to great teams.
Mm-hmm.
Cleveland's a good team, a competitive team. They're nowhere close to a great team.
Sure.
At home, if Dallas is ever going to blow someone out, it might as well be this week.
Has to be a game they win, bottom line.
If they lose, they're done.
Last game that I like is Tampa Bay -2 at Carolina. And to give you credit, Dave, last week that you said that you thought that Tampa Bay was going to make the wild card, I kind of made a bit of a funny face. I wasn't necessarily buying it in. And not that a win over San Diego convinces me that anybody is fantastic.
Which, speaking of a gift, I mean, that Philip Rivers interception was I was just, please sign that guy to a 10-year extension, San Diego, please.
But Tampa Bay -2 at Carolina, I think, is a really good spot for them. I mean, this offense has put up at least 30 points a game in 3 straight games, and they've just been dominating all season long.
I think it's more like 5 straight games.
Yeah, I mean, Doug Martin is just playing absolutely out of his mind and actually getting into the discussion of Rookie of the Year. We thought it was just going to be all Andrew Luck and RG3, and Doug Martin's come out of nowhere and is all of a sudden looking like a top 5, top 10 running back. Josh Freeman is connecting with some, finally has the number one big wide receiver he was looking for with Vincent Jackson, and you know, he liked Mike Williams and nearly as Ben, but they weren't going to be the number one options. Mike Williams is a great second option there. Carolina, you know, they've been disappointing so far this year. Specifically, their defense is going to struggle to stop Tampa Bay's offense. I think this could turn into a shootout. And in that case, I love Tampa Bay's offense. I think Carolina can definitely be stopped a few times by this Tampa Bay defense, which isn't fantastic, but does make plays. Cam Newton, especially this season, has shown propensity to make some bad throws, get caught a couple times. I think if it is a shootout, there's a good chance that Tampa Bay could force a couple turnovers, keep this offense rolling, and they're in control right now of the wild card, and so this is a game they have to win, even in Carolina. I love them at -2. I think they'll probably win this game by 7 to 10 points.
Yeah, the case to be made for Carolina, obviously, other than the fact that they're at home, is just how bad Tampa Bay's pass defense is, and, mm-hmm. and Cam Newton should be able to exploit that, but... And you know, Carolina's defense has been on and off. It's been a roller coaster this year. I don't know if it's going to have a good game against this Tampa Bay offense that's been rolling over pretty much everybody. I get the feeling this one's going to be a shootout, and in that regard, you know, it could easily go either way. But it's hard to make a compelling case for Carolina because they haven't really shown the ability to score into the 30s. Mm-hmm. You know, they generally are scoring mid-low 20s, if even. And against Tampa Bay's defense, yeah, maybe you get to high 20s, low 30s. I don't think that's going to be enough with the way Tampa Bay's offense is rolling and clicking on all cylinders right now. So I'm a little surprised this was only -2, but I guess it has to be because it's on the road. And but, you know, Tampa Bay has now won 2 straight on the road after having a lot of problems on the road over the last couple of years.
And let's also not forget that Tampa Bay beat Carolina to start the season, a game that at the time we thought was a pretty big upset because everything was all about Cam Newton coming in.
Right.
Tampa Bay just absolutely dominated and they contained him the whole time.
Yeah, so if the defense plays anything like that, the offense has come such a long way mm-hmm. since week one that it won't even be close.
Lastly, my upset, I was going to go with Miami, but you wanted to stay claim to that as one of your picks, so I gave that one to you.
Thank you so
I'm
much.
I'm so nice.
What a nice
guy. I really am. I sent the text first, and he just comes out of nowhere and is like, no, I want that. I mean, what the hell?
But
Kansas City is +3.5 at home against Cincinnati, and I don't love this pick as an upset, but there were a lot of 8, 10, and even, I think, a 15-point spread out there this week. So Kansas City, I picked them last week to cover the spread against Pittsburgh, +13. They did that easily. I don't know whether that was necessarily them playing very good football or Pittsburgh just kind of doing what I thought they would, which was kind of playing to the competition. But the defense for Kansas City actually had a good game for once. They have been torn up by a bunch of teams on the ground and in the air so far this season. I'm not convinced that they're all of a sudden top 10, top 15 defense, but they definitely showed up. Offensively, Jamaal Charles is obviously the key to this offense. They have to get him involved. Cincinnati's run defense is pretty average. They're not really terrible or great. So as far as an upset pick is concerned, I'm going to go with Kansas City. Cincinnati came out of absolutely nowhere to destroy the Giants last week.
Yep.
One of the most head-scratching results that I've seen all season long, because it wasn't a fluke. This was just this Sunday, that Sunday, Cincinnati was by far the better team than the Giants. Don't know why.
Yeah, you were saying back in week one when Baltimore crushed Cincinnati that Baltimore would have crushed anyone that night. Cincinnati apparently would have crushed anyone this Sunday.
Which is weird. And Cincinnati all of a sudden, you know, they're 4-5, and they have 3 games against AFC West opponents in a row, starting with Kansas City. So they can all of a sudden jump back into what we know is a weak AFC, can jump back in the wild card race. So they should win this game. They probably will, but for an upset pick, Kansas City played well last week. Cincinnati might be flying a little too high from the Giants upset. I'm going to go with Kansas City.
Yeah, anytime you have a super lopsided blowout like that, I kind of like to fade the team. So that will be an interesting game. If you want Miami, you can have it instead of Kansas City. I just thought that for the sake of argument, you know, I agree with your upset so much, I'll take it. But, you know, hey, I can't really make a compelling argument.
I'll have a surprise for you after you do your Miami Buffalo.
Oh, you have a surprise for me. Oh, okay. Well, in that case, I'll just get right to it then.
Let's do it.
I love Miami +2.5 at Buffalo. Speaking of lopsided blowouts, anytime a team is coming off of its absolute worst game of the season, I'm all over them the following week. Mm-hmm. And 37-3, it against...
Want to talk about head-scratching.
At home as a six-point favorite against Tennessee. The Tennessee Titans. It just doesn't get worse than that.
Agreed.
Tannehill, I was talking about how great he's been and how he hasn't been turning the ball over. Three interceptions from him. Mm. Defense, strong all year. Gets rattled a bit by Luck.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't bail Tannehill out at all in this one. Makes him pay for all of his mistakes. Just a humiliating loss for Miami. And I think it's actually beneficial for them this is a short week.
Mm-hmm.
Because coming off of a loss like that, yeah, you're a bit dejected. But I think the stronger feeling is, God, I can't wait to get back out there and yeah. just go kick some ass.
Mm-hmm.
And to only have to wait 3 days to do that, I think they're going to be rearing to go here. Buffalo, on the other hand, it's always hard to gauge emotion, but that was a pretty heartbreaking loss to come that close
mm-hmm.
after it looked like they were out of it the whole game and New England owns them so bad and to get inside the red zone at the end of the game, have a shot, lose, going to be a little dejected. They don't have much to play for. Miami still has an outside chance mm-hmm. at a wild card spot. I think that ship has sailed, but on top of all that, Miami is the better team, in my opinion. They haven't played. They haven't played up to it the last couple of weeks. But I still, in my gut, believe in this team.
Mm-hmm.
And my model says Miami 28, Buffalo 21. So model check, my gut check, and philosophy pick check. It's a triple play.
Yeah, this is an interesting game because I typed up a preview for this morning for Sports Invasion, and I had Miami the whole way. Obviously, I had Miami. I texted you yesterday I wanted mm-hmm. Miami. And I convinced myself that Buffalo is going to win this game.
Did you do this out of spite, or do you actually
No, actually
it?
Not. And,
right,
and let me explain why.
Lay it on me.
The Buffalo Bills are 3-6.
Yes,
they
are.
Played 9 games. They've only played 3 home games so far. They've already played 6 road games, including 4 of their last 5 have been on the road. You know their last 2 opponents were on the road? Houston and New England.
Not easy.
Not easy. Now you come home. It's a Thursday night game. Buffalo, hasn't been good in how long? It's been quite some time. The fans have always been solid there for Buffalo. They've always been there. They've been supportive. It's a night game. And here's the most important thing. And you talk a lot about Miami's defense, and I agree with you. I like Miami's defense. I like them a lot more than I like Buffalo's defense, of course. But offensively,
mm-hmm.
I like Ryan Fitzpatrick more than I like Ryan Tannehill.
That's a fair assessment.
At the moment, based on motivation and based on their playing, I like C.J. Spiller more than I like Reggie Bush. Because Fred Jackson is out again. C.J. Spiller, all this guy wants is a shot.
Yeah, well, every time he gets in there, he has big games.
And on the receiving core, even though he hasn't had as good a season as he had last year, I like Steve Johnson more than I like any of Miami's receivers. So because of that, because I like Buffalo's offense at every single position more than I like Miami's offense at home, I'm going to go with Buffalo.
That is a compelling argument for a fantasy football team. In real football, it doesn't come down to skill position matchups, because I agree with what you just said, but I just think as a team, Miami, I'll give you that, but Buffalo's offense is certainly scarier than Miami's offense,
mm-hmm.
but the discrepancy in defense is Buffalo has routinely given up 35 points on defense. Are they going to do that against Miami? Maybe not. But I think Miami scores into the high 20s. And
how do you
think
they score in the high 20s if Reggie Bush, their biggest weapon, is struggling?
I think Tannehill has a good game. I think he has a bounce-back game. He had a terrible game last week. He's going up against a pretty soft secondary in this game. I think they let him throw, and I think he has a good game. If he doesn't, this pick is screwed, obviously. I mean, if Tannehill... In games that Tannehill has thrown an interception,
mm-hmm.
the Dolphins only have 1 win, and they have all of their losses. In games that he doesn't, they're undefeated, or they might have 1 loss. But it's not rocket science to say, hey, who wins the turnover battle wins.
Yeah.
But if Tannehill doesn't need to outplay Fitzpatrick, he just needs to play within his means, not make mistakes. I think he's capable of doing that against this defense. But, a Thursday night game, Buffalo's crowd is always going to be there. Maybe it does rattle him. I don't know. But that was a nice little curveball. I like that. This is going to be a good game now. It wasn't going to be a good game before,
no,
but now I'm convinced. St. Louis minus 3.5 over the Jets. I don't know how you feel about this one, if you got any tricks up your sleeve, but the Jets are a wreck. The Jets are a wreck.
Yeah.
Now, we've talked plenty about how much of a wreck the Jets are on the football field, especially with their injuries to Holmes and Revis. But what in the world is this team doing this week? But no, Tebow is terrible, and defensive starters are coming out, and then Sean Green today says, well, you got to make a change sometime. It's just such a wreck. Yeah. And Rex Ryan is defending Tebow and saying, you know, Marcus still our quarterback. And it's just sad. Yeah. It's the second straight year now. This is such a pathetic locker room.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, put aside the fact that St. Louis at home is leaps and bounds better than they are on the road.
Yep.
And that this defense has definitely shown a propensity to get pressure on the quarterback, and this Jets offense doesn't have a pulse, so they really should have no problem holding them to 7 to 10 points. Amendola's back, and that just does wonders for the St. Louis offense. I mean, amazing that he got back so fast, speaking of Iron Man earlier. But this is just fade the Jets. You were fading the Jets a couple weeks ago when again, we were just focusing on a team that maybe still had some cohesiveness in the locker room, but just sucked. Now they suck, and they're sucky human beings. I just don't know what there is to like here at all for the Jets.
Yeah, you know, it's not too often that I actually disagree with you on most of your picks, but that's the case this week. The one pick that I agree with you on, of course, is this one. Earlier in this season, in back-to-back games, I picked St. Louis to win at home against Seattle and then against San Francisco at home. I thought that they had the capability to do it.
You were right. That was before I got on board.
And at home, this team is much like Seattle in the same division, where they can beat almost anybody at home, and on the road, they can barely beat the Cleveland Browns if they play them, you know. But at home, especially against the Jets, who have more issues now, amazingly, off the field than they do on the field, which we didn't think would happen, but St. Louis dominated. Yeah, I don't even know why I'm talking.
We've seen the Rams. We saw the Rams get exposed a bit on defense against the Patriots and the Packers.
Patriots in
I'm
London.
I'm not
yeah.
quite that worried yeah. about this Jets offense. If they come out and stomp the Rams, good for them. But I just love to see it. And then my last spread pick, I like San Diego plus 7.5 at Denver. This is a real philosophy pick.
Yeah, I'm curious.
I am just sinking hard with this ship because it is not working out very well for me this year. But this game, it's very difficult to pick against Denver because, you know, Peyton Manning obviously having a career year, or at least one of his career years. Denver, they've scored 30-plus in 4 straight games. They've won and covered in 4 straight games. The Broncos look as good as you're going to look. You can't really make a case for San Diego from an X's and O's perspective. I would argue that the two most potent motivational tools in the NFL are revenge and desperation. San Diego has both of those in spades in this game.
Sure.
They got completely humiliated on national television when they coughed up a 24-0 lead at home to this team. That was pathetic. Beyond pathetic. And I think even though we always kind of knew this team was a tailspin waiting to happen, that triggered it.
Yeah.
That was the tipping point. That's definitely where Rivers started getting back into his own head again. That was a disaster of a game for San Diego. And now you look at the division race, and this is a 2-game separation between Denver and San Diego. If Denver wins this game, the division is over. It's probably over anyway, but Denver wins this game, they open up a 3-game lead on San Diego and have the head-to-head tiebreaker. San Diego would have to have a +4 win differential down the stretch. Never in a million years is that going to happen. San Diego wins this game, and all of a sudden it's a 1-game gap and no head-to-head tiebreaker. So everything is on the line for San Diego here. They've just got to lay it all out on the line. Where's the North Turner late season magic? I don't know. 7.5 points in a division rivalry of this magnitude. I don't think San Diego ever wins this game outright. I don't think they have the capability. I don't think Rivers versus Manning in the fourth quarter, it can find it in the cosmos that Rivers gets the upper hand. But plus 7.5 it's about time San Diego mans up a little and gets a 4-point loss. I mean, please, please, you know?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure on the spread at the moment, but, you know, just a few minutes ago, I said that it seems like every week, you know, I'm changing my mind on who the best AFC-NFC team is. That's actually not the case, because for the last 3 weeks, I thought that Denver is actually the best
team. You have
team
been, yeah, I was arguing Houston against you, which I still would,
because
it's 1A, 1B.
If you look at their last few games, as you mentioned, 35-24 at San Diego, then you have the bye week, then you beat New Orleans 34-14, which is looking a lot more impressive beating the Saints now than it was beating in the end of the season. 31-23 at Cincinnati, a tough game. Then last week, just destroying Carolina 36-14 on the road. They are finally figuring out that they can put together an entire game, and when they do that, they're going to be one of the most dangerous teams in the league. Not to mention the fact that Denver is 3-1 at home, their only loss to Houston. So I love Denver at home. I love this offense. They're healthy. They're ready to go. San Diego sure certainly has the talent to cover the spread and put up a good fight here. I just don't know if mentally or, you know, off the field, if they have the strength to do it. I think that there's a decent chance that Denver wins this game by 14 points. If it's close, it wouldn't shock me. I agree with you that I don't think there's any way San Diego wins this game. It could end up being a lot closer than it should be. But I think Denver has what it takes to win this game by 10, 12 points. I just love this team.
See, I'd be surprised if it were 10, 12 points. I think Denver either rolls or it ends up being pretty darn close.
That's,
you know, either way, we both see Denver pulling off the win. But you look at the Tampa Bay game. San Diego should have won that game. And defensively, San Diego actually did a pretty damn good job at least slowing down Tampa Bay's offense compared to what the last three or four teams that have faced them have done. But then you have Rivers running full speed to one side of the field, throw cross body to the other side of the field, grossly underthrown, the easiest pick six in the world. And it's just Phil Rivers, and he could very well do that again here. But if he doesn't, if he avoids that one disaster, that epic meltdown that he's good for a game, San Diego on paper is good enough to keep this one within a touchdown, but neither of us will be surprised with a Denver big win, obviously. I mean, I think we're both on the same page about how good Denver is, but there was once upon a time last year when I would make some of the zaniest philosophy picks where I wouldn't, at least right now I'm trying to argue a case for San Diego. Sometimes I would just say, hey, it's a philosophy pick. I don't know.
Cleveland -3 at New England.
Right, and then it would win. They would go into New England and beat them. This year, I don't know. This year I've lost my magic touch, but if winning with Philip Rivers, that would be magic. So let's see if I can pull that out. And last, speaking of magic, my upset pick.
They're finally playing against each other.
Oakland over New Orleans. Now, this is more a joke than anything. No. Alright. This is tough. Oakland, getting back to the recurring theme we've had so far about teams getting completely demolished, having their worst game of the year, etc., etc.
Sure.
Tennessee, when they got destroyed by Chicago, completely wiped the field with them by almost the same exact score that Oakland got beat by Baltimore, they respond by going into Miami and crushing them. Mm-hmm. Oakland at home here can score on New Orleans. Even without their running backs, they can absolutely pass and score on New Orleans. Can they stop New Orleans? Probably not. That's the problem. But as upsets go, this has the potential to be a shootout type of game. Oakland beat Pittsburgh 35-31. It could be that kind of a score. And Oakland, when they came out of the bye with some real positive momentum on defense, forced Matt Ryan in some uncharacteristic turnovers that he usually doesn't cough up. Maybe they find that sort of a game here. New Orleans is looking really good, and this could... It's difficult to say that New Orleans is going to overlook a game considering the adversity they've had to overcome to even get into the position they're in now. But if you're going to overlook a game, I think it's this Oakland team coming off of giving up 55 points to the Ravens last week and 42 points to the Bucks the week before. I think it could be a shootout win for Oakland. I also just think it could be a New Orleans misstep. It should be a New Orleans 28-point win. It could be something silly.
You know, I'm trying not to get my hopes up about the Saints because I think this is just going to be end up being a frustrating year for the Saints. Bottom line, I don't think they make the playoffs despite the fact that the NFC wild card isn't looking as strong as it was before. I still think 10-6 is probably the wild card in the NFC, and I don't know if the Saints can end the season 6-1 with their schedule. Having said that, there are moments in NFL seasons that teams rally around, bond over. We had one a couple weeks ago with the Colts where he mentioned Vic Ballard laying his body on the line for that touchdown. Yep. Since then, they've won games.
Yep.
Last week, the Saints played the Falcons. Their big rival, undefeated. Roddy White talks about how they think they could be 16-0. The Saints control the game the entire time. Falcons have the ball first and goal, down by 4, 2 minutes to go. As they've done all season, the Falcons struggle throughout games, come up with a huge drive at the end and win. As they've done all year, the Saints' defense looks terrible, gives up big plays like that. No chance the Saints stop the Falcons first and goal.
No.
They stop them. 4 passes in a row, they stuff them. At home, that's the kind of play that the Saints can rally around, especially this defense, because the offense has been there the whole season. This defense can finally pick a game that they went to, and then that's the reason we won this game. All season long, the Saints' offense has been the reason they've won. Finally, the Saints' defense steps up, and they're getting pressure on the quarterback. They're finally realizing Greg Williams, despite the fact that he's a gigantic dick, actually knew something about football when it came to blitzing the ball. I mean, so having said all that, the Saints do tend to look over games, especially on the road, against teams like Oakland. And
Drew Brees tends to throw the occasional interception against a stupid team.
Exactly.
And I actually, sorry to cut you off, but that actually, that was the point I meant to make also that you just brought up. What an emotional game last week for New Orleans. Do they have anything left in the tank for this stupid team? I don't know.
I mean, the fact is, if they win this game, they're 5-5, back to 500, and only a game out of the wild card, with Seattle at 6-4. So they need motivation. There it is for them. With the schedule that they have, they still have to play the Giants, they play the Falcons again, they play Tampa Bay again, they have a couple other tough games. They have to beat Oakland. This is the mindset that this whole team, I think, has. A lot of times, only your leaders think that, and the coaches can try to convince you to get that. The Saints have to believe right now that they actually have a shot at this NFC wildcard again, despite all the things that have been going against them. They have to win this game. They have to have the motivation on the road against Oakland, a trap game for them perfectly. They have to have the motivation. I think they do that. I think they come out. I think they win.
KT, impending disappointment or not, you want a win this week because it keeps your playoff hopes alive. Mm-hmm. I, of course, want a win, but in reality, a loss is better for me for draft position. The Oakland Raiders will win this game to crush both of our futures. It's just the way we live.
The one thing I will say is no Darren McFadden is definitely going to hurt, especially. It always hurts every week, but specifically this week against a bad rushing defense where you could exploit them.
A guy like Tywan Jones that's just super fast but isn't a great running back could just hit a
Reese,
home run.
Reese has played well, too.
Reese, I love Marcel Reese. He could just hit a home run against this defense, but both of our dreams getting crushed. That
sounds
like
about
a pretty
right.
likely scenario. So let's look at some fantasy picks, sir.
Yeah, just a couple players this week. One of them is actually a Saint, a guy I've watched the last few games. I love Chris Ivory, the way he's running the ball. 27% owned. He's just running like he's playing for a job. That's the bottom line. He's aggressive. He's fast. He's strong. He's stiff-arming guys. He's making plays. I love this guy. And now going up against Oakland, I think that the running game could have a big game. Obviously, the concern with Ivory is it's such a crowded backfield, and there's even talk that Darren Sproles might be coming back this week. But I think that when Darren Sproles does come back, I actually think that the Saints realize how great that Ivory's playing. Ingram's had some solid games. They might even put Darren Sproles, he'll still be in the backfield, but I think they might use him more as a receiver and keep these physical guys at running back. So I love Ivory, especially this week. I picked him up. I'm putting him in this week. I think he's going to have a really good game. Will he break out another huge touchdown? Potentially not, but he's going to bust 3 or 4 huge plays, get you a solid 60, 65 yards, could get you that touchdown.
It's amazing how strong that backfield is. Mm-hmm. And
when
how
Mark Ingram's your fourth string.
Right, and how underutilized it is for the most part. And then when New Orleans starts rolling, it's usually because they remember, oh, wait, we've got four guys that can run the ball pretty well. Maybe we should give this a shot to set up a play action.
Exactly, and that's a fantastic point, because the Saints weren't running the ball in the beginning of the season.
Not at all. And now, we talked about it. They were comfortable shooting out.
Yeah.
And now they're willing to say, let's slow this drive down a little bit.
It took them seven games to realize they can run the ball and play some defense.
Pound it down your throat a little bit. And against a team like Oakland, you're going to be able to do whatever you want on offense, so run the ball, grind it down a little bit. I agree. I mean, there's no reason that he's not going to have a solid game this week, certainly. Mm-hmm.
The other guy that I like is Donnie Avery. He's 24% owned, and I'm going to kind of loop him in with T.Y. Hilton, the other receiver that the Colts have. You know, as we mentioned, the Colts are 6-3, looking fantastic. Andrew Luck is throwing the ball to all these guys. Reggie Wayne's going to get a lot of attention from the Patriots. I mean, the Patriots are familiar with the Colts. They're familiar with Peyton Manning, but they know the players.
Yeah, this is the new chapter of the rivalry.
But they know these Colts. They've played with them before. They know what to expect from Reggie Wayne. They're going to show him a lot of attention. I think Donnie Avery and T.Y. Hilton in a game that should be a shootout, I think are going to get a lot of looks. I think that, you know, the Colts are definitely capable of putting up 24, 28 points against this New England team. I don't know if they can win the game, but I think Avery and Hilton are going to get a lot of looks and going to get a lot of yards for you.
Yeah, we know one thing for sure about New England, that's their pass defense sucks.
Yeah.
So whether it's New England jumps out to a big lead and Indy is just throwing and throwing and throwing trying to catch up, mm-hmm. or whether it's a shootout pure from the start, either way, you're going to see big numbers for Andrew Luck by the end of the day. What do you see in this game? New England is the one team that I send out my NFL newsletter every week. I pick every game against the spread. I had a New England game right once this year. Because this team, I can't figure them out for the life of me. It's like St. Louis. Oh, gee, St. Louis is a decent defense. That'll be a good game. 45-7. The Jets, New England. We both agreed that was overtime. Buffalo takes the end of the game. This week, I like Indy +9. New England will probably win by 40. I don't understand. What do you see this week?
I like Indy as well, +9. I actually...
Maybe, again, as a backdoor, potentially, even.
It could be that, but honestly, the way the Colts are playing, would it shock you if they beat the Patriots?
No, but here's the problem. The only... I'm totally on board with the Colts +9. The only problem is, you look at this, they've won four straight games and covered the spread in four straight games, and they're rocking and rolling. Those four wins, Miami, Tennessee, Jacksonville, Cleveland.
Fair enough.
So this is going to tell us a lot about the Colts. What are the Colts? Because even if they lose this game close, if they go into Gillette and have a good game, then
they already
totally
beat the Packers this year.
They did, and that was at home. Mm-hmm. And Luck has had his issues have come on the road.
Yeah.
If he can go into this game and have a big game, I don't even care if the Colts win. I don't think they care if they win. I think they're going to be the wild card team anyway. Mm-hmm. If they can go out there and show that they belong in a game like this, that would be really cool. But the problem is, I'm going to pick the Colts, and that means they're going to get blown out. Very, very sad. You know, today here on NFL Numbers, I'm just beyond the numbers. I'm being very negative, saying everything that I'm picking is going to go wrong. But when you go 3-10 in your newsletter and you fall behind to KT four games, your outlook on life is not so sunshiny.
You know, I know that position because I was in that position last year. As
right.
you recall, I gave up on life, and
yes,
I stayed that year. That day, I went 3-0. I'm pretty sure.
So all of this negative. Maybe the football gods are listening.
Don't
show
look
a little
down
petty.
On you.
All I don't even need. I don't even need a 3-0 week. I just need you to have an 0-3 week. That's all.
I probably will.
I don't wish positive on me. Just negative on you. That's
Fair
all I want. So as always, that's a great note to end on. Curse you, KT. As always, you can email me at VegasDavesDime@gmail.com.
Or me at KevinJTAY@gmail.com. Don't forget, you can catch this podcast and all things sports at sportsinvasion.net.
Thank you guys so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys.